This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that a big portion of people who listen to Joy at work, just like you? Right now, times are very tough financially, and without your support, Joy may not be around to help you through your work day. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
You are on Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. And just in case, I think Betty's been posting a few pictures of people are in shock. Yes, Macca has shaved his beard off. It wasn't actually my complete intention when I started trimming my beard, but I messed it up and I looked like a cheap panel beater job. So I thought I'll take it off.
Macca, if people want to see the photos, what should they do in terms of Twitter?
I don't know. Dave, have we...
Dave, what's our handle on Twitter this morning if people want to try and look at all of our pictures?
You can go to hashtag SatMag or to at SatMagJoy94.9 and all the skinny is there.
Oh, there we go.
There you go. You can see all the pictures from the studio live as they happen.
But, of course, I have got my passport photo has me with a beard, which is going to be interesting. What am I going to do?
I'm sure they'll let you back in again.
I'll have to put the beard on.
Who's on next, Macca?
Our next guest is Danny Fadul from the Human Rights Law Centre. Good morning, Danny. How are you?
Good, thanks. Great to be on the program and looking forward to how you're going at immigration and customs with the passport.
Oh, look, I know. It'll be interesting. I suppose I can get a few days' growth. I'm just the picture was actually was relatively short beard, so I should be okay, as long as I don't Sorry?
You'll be fine. In my case, I had my passport photo, I had hair on my head, and when I was travelling with it, I had shaved the hair off my head, and I got through customs immigration fine, but you do get a couple of, like, double takes of, like, is this the right person? They just do a quick up and down look before they go, oh, yeah, it's the same face.
Yeah. Thank you. Good advice. If I get in trouble, I know who to ring at the Human Rights Law Centre. We don't have a federal human rights charter as such, do we, Danny? And is the environment now right, do you think, for this to happen under the new government? And if so, why do we need one?
It's a really good question, because Australia is the only Western liberal democracy not to have one. Britain, New Zealand, Canada, United States, Europe, comparable Western liberal democracy, they all have some form of entrenchment of human rights at the heart of the laws of their governments. We don't have that here, and we're missing out on all the benefits that everyone in the community can have as a result. I think we do have an opportunity with a new government. The Albanese government went to this election with a commitment to improving human rights in Australia, and as part of that, they committed to doing a review into whether to introduce a Charter of Human Rights. So definitely now is an excellent time to see Australia no longer be the odd one out and people missing out because we're not having human rights at the place at the heart of our laws.
So a charter itself, Danny, we see in Victoria there's a human rights charter. It doesn't actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, it doesn't stop abuse of those rights, does it? A charter. It actually needs to be enshrined more specifically in legislation. Is that correct?
Well, a Charter of Rights is legislation.
Okay.
There's currently a state-based charter in Victoria, which is a law, the Charter of Rights and Responsibilities. Queensland has one, as well as the ACT. And because it's a law, what it means is that government needs to be considering human rights before they're making decisions. And to give you an example of how it's operated in Victoria, there was an effort at one stage to criminalise people being able to sleep in their cars.
Yeah.
It was using the Victorian Charter that prevented that from happening, and as a result, there was a redraft of that law to ensure that such something as basic as people being able to stay in their cars whilst they're trying to figure out where they can have a more secure place to live isn't being removed. Another example in Victoria is using the Victorian Charter. The Victorian government did a comprehensive approach of ensuring that there was LGBTIQ inclusive language across the Victorian Public Service, as well as an opt-in approach for Victorian public servants to add their pronouns to their email signatures. So the Victorian Charter, as well as the ones in Queensland and ACT, have actually done quite a bit of work. The problem, unfortunately, is it doesn't get as much attention as it should, and that's one of the reasons why we released a report with 101 examples of how the Victorian, Queensland and ACT charters have been helping people in those three states.
The new Commonwealth Attorney General is Mark Dreyfus QC. Unlike the last several Attorney Generals we have had, Mark is actually a distinguished jurist as a QC, brings a great legal mind to his new role. Do you know what his attitude is towards a human rights charter?
I'm not sure what his status on that issue is, because so far it's clear he's got a very full plate of things he's working on. He's indicated his priority is the Federal Anti-Corruption Commission to get legislation on that passed by the end of this year. So that's one of the things that we're hoping through releasing that report of 101 cases to highlight to the Attorney General, as well as the whole federal government, that there is an opportunity here to ensure that everyone benefits in our community from having human rights at the heart of federal law.
And this might be the challenge, I suspect, that you've got a newly elected Labor government. They've got a very clear promise about establishing a Commonwealth Independent Corruption Commission. You saw the new Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, on election night give that commitment to implementing the Uluru Statement from the Heart in full. So that requires establishing a new voice to Parliament, a terrific thing, but not without its legal complexities. There's a commitment from Labor there to Australia becoming a republic. These are all very, very big legal reforms. You throw a human rights charter in the mix, which I personally think is a great thing as well, but you can see that these things need to be done in a measured, systematic way, and it may be that the idea of a human rights charter just gets pushed a little bit down the list of reforms. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that an election commitment is an election commitment, and one of the things that we heard in our politics and in this recent election debate has been one about making sure we have integrity in our politics. And part of that integrity is making commitments and then following through on those commitments. And in this case, with a charter, Labor did not commit to do a Human Rights Act in their first term of government. What they did commit to doing was to do a review. And doing a review into having a charter of human rights doesn't prevent them from proceeding with getting the Federal Anti-Corruption Commission finished by the end of this year, something which we also think is a very important thing that we need to improve integrity in our politics, or doing all the other things they committed to.
Danny.
Apologies, Danny. Yep. This is David Allen here. I'm a journalist in the outside world, and one of the things Mark Dreyfus has committed to in Labor's first term is legislation offering more protection and more freedom for journalists. Now, one thing that's often been in human rights charters, especially in Westminster systems, has been legislative protection for freedom of the press. And Australia is one of the few countries on earth that does not have that at all. Our legislative, our freedom of the press is enshrined by a letter written in the 19th century by a governor. What do you think needs to be done at a federal level to improve freedom of the press in Australia, and what impact could that have?
Well, I think the first thing to say is one of the things that shocked me was in 2019, the Australian Federal Police raiding the ABC and raiding the home of Annika Smithurst, then working for the Sunday Telegraph. in pursuit of leaks from the federal government, which were in the public interest. In both their cases, we're talking about serious issues of the public interest, and the response was AFP raiding journalists' offices, and in the case of one, the Home. That's just appalling. And I think that highlights the point that press freedom isn't something which is like a nice to have. It's something which is important for the vitality of our democracy, but also it's something which is under threat, as shown in that example. So what we need is a couple of things. One is we need a whole series of reforms of our federal laws to ensure that there's greater protection for journalists, and also the whistleblowers who are acting in the public interest. Protecting journalists alone is not enough if the whistleblower is subject to serious sanction for acting in the public interest, and there are currently three whistleblowers facing trial right now for acting in the public interest, of which the most notable one is respect to Bernard Collieri, who was a former ACT yes. Attorney General representing a whistleblower. But we also need to have a broader protection for freedom of expression and freedom of the press. And that's what a Charter of Human Rights does as well, because one of the things about changing laws is the laws are appropriate for that particular point in time. As we know, the media is constantly shifting. Social media is of a much greater significance than it was 10 or 15 years ago. And obviously it's important to continually update our laws, our various laws, Crimes Act and the like, to try and make sure they keep up to speed, to continue to protect journalists and whistleblowers reporting and acting in the public interest. You also need a general protection of the freedom of expression and press freedom to try and make sure that there is a broad support for journalists reporting in the public interest.
It's interesting, Danny, because, you know, some commentators, probably more so on the right, would say that this is placing, even though they operate in the media, they'd say this is placing the media above the law. I'd respond to that by saying, no, it's actually providing a legal protection for what the media does. Doesn't place them above the law, because they're still subject to the overwhelming majority of laws, but press freedom as part of a Charter of Human Rights is very important. So I think it's going to be a pretty interesting challenge for Mark Dreyfus and the government, but I dare say there's a lot of support on the crossbench and in the Senate for this. So it's probably going to be, if they can get a charter, to be proposed, I'd say the chance of it being passed is pretty good.
Danny, this is David Allen again. Previously, in terms of human rights charters in Australia that have been proposed, there have been several attempts at legislation and plebiscites, usually by Labor governments, and they've unfortunately been handed a thumping. What do you think is different now amongst Australian communities that might enable this to get through in the 2020s?
I think the big thing is that people are seeing many things that they assumed were rights in Australia are not. And as a result, there's a need to have greater protection of those human rights. So in the last 2 years, we've had an extraordinary situation in this country in terms of COVID. Can anyone have imagined that we would be having a situation where we were barred from leaving the country? Could anyone have imagined that we would be having major restrictions on movement? Could anyone imagine that we would need to do major measures in order to protect the right to health and the right to life? Like, some major dramatic things have happened. But it's not just that. It's also things like the right to education. Overnight, we had to move to remote learning for the very sensible reason of making sure we didn't spread COVID in schools, especially when we didn't have a vaccine at that stage. But the problem with switching overnight to remote learning is, what if you don't have good internet access? What if you don't own a laptop at home? State education departments and individual schools did their best to try and plug the gaps. But the point is, what do you do if for some reason you fell between the cracks? What recourse could you do? In New South Wales, they have an Education Act, which has as one of its principles at the very beginning, the principle of every child should be able to have an education. And then later on in that same legislation, it says, oh, by the way, anything it says about the right to education isn't legally enforceable. Well, why is that the case? Surely it should be enforceable that if a child slips between the cracks, they shouldn't have to be able to have a persuasive story on the nightly news to be able to get an outcome. They should be able to rely on a law that means they're able to go to that department and say, my child has fallen between the cracks in terms of making sure they're able to have the school education that they should have, like every other child is having. This needs to be fixed. Those are the sort of things we've now experienced over the last 2 years. And I think that has been shown also in some polling we did last year, which has shown a 14% increase in support for a Charter of Human Rights since when we did that poll last in 2019, pre-COVID. So I think the circumstances have certainly shifted the community's mind about the need for a Charter of Human Rights. And I think the other thing that comes to mind as well is I think a lot of the scares and bogeys that are put forward kind of set to the side when you actually watch the Queensland ACT and Victorian Human Rights Acts and Charters in action. They've helped people out in meaningful ways, in many different ways. And I think that also provides a lot of confidence to say that these things work. They help people make sure that their rights are respected and everyone benefits. It's not a case of someone loses by having a Charter of Human Rights. Everyone benefits.
You've made your case very well, Danny, and it's a reminder, I think, for us all that we need to be constantly vigilant in this area. If you look in the United States, so far in 2022, there have been 240 anti-LGBTQ bills filed in state legislatures. These are proposed new laws which would limit the ability of trans people to play sport or use bathrooms. Proposed new laws which say things like don't say gay in schools and limit the ability to talk about gay issues in the schooling system. Or exemptions to discrimination laws so organisations can discriminate against LGBTQI people. So again, something like a Charter of Human Rights can very much help in these things, and it's a reminder to us all that we need to be constantly vigilant and keep pushing forward.
Thanks for your time, Danny. Unfortunately, we've run out of it. So, but, you know, it's great. I encourage people to engage on this.
Saturday Magazine, every Saturday from 10 until noon on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.